6. Local/commercial radio. Rich Shayers had convinced me to do something more worthwhile than providing a soothing backdrop of music and companionship for those in need. So I'd accepted his offer of a job DJing for a fledgling station. The setup reminded me very much of the buccaneering can-do spirit of Radio Caroline, maverick disc jockeys flouting regulations to give listeners something new and fresh. My job wasn't on pirate radio, that would have been a criminal offence. It was the in-store radio station for a branch of record shop, Our Price. It was a pilot scheme way, 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 way ahead of its time. Indeed, it folded within weeks. But the team. It's my privilege to say they were some of the most dazzling young broadcasters I'd ever had the pleasure of working with. They were scientific in their understanding of good radio. They were radiologists. Check out this roll call. Paul Stubbs, an aficionado of US shock jocks and personality DJs. He sadly never knew what he had. He left the business shortly after Our Price and now works for Hertz Car Rental. Still follows the US game and is a fountain of knowledge on call-ins and quiz ideas. Invaluable. Phil Schofield. Phil was always the baby of the group and had a snotty-nosed quality that we bullied out of him. Now better known as the presenter of TV's This Morning, Phil was back then a bit of a know-it-all and was brought down a peg or two by off-air pranks such as having his new shoes filled with piss. There was no smoking gun / dripping willy, so Stubbs got away with it. It was a tough time for Phil, and he never talks about it. Phil, if you're listening to this, why not give me a call? John Boyd. That voice. Warm, reassuring, and deliciously transatlantic. John later turned his back on radio and has made quite the name for himself as a voiceover artist with, by his own admission, a pretty limited range. His voice can be heard in the lift of an art gallery in Bath. He tells me that he takes women there and then mimes the words doors closing or third floor over the sound of the recording. Freaks them out. Cracking SOH. Brian Golding. Bonkers Bry combined a wacky sense of humour with a genuine mental illness and went on to co-host Drive Time on Signal Radio before killing himself in 1991. As a team, I think we all knew we had something special, and that sense of worth was a shot in the arm for a young, thrusting Alan Partridge. With that shot, easily as powerful as an intravenous drug like heroin, smack, or gear, I was driven to go out into the world of broadcasting and succeed. Nothing was going to stop me. 1984 to 1987. Nothing much happened here. It's 1988, and a young side-parted young radio reporter is pinning a pretty rude lower-division football manager down on his team's disgraceful disciplinary record. 6 red cards in as many games, says the reporter. Why do you continue to tolerate this culture of hooliganism? The manager tries to worm his way off the hook by disputing the figures. They're yellow cards, he says, and that's actually a pretty good behaviour record. But the reporter has the figures written down on a notepad and won't be deterred. In the end, the manager loses his rag. You bloody idiot! Pulls the top of the microphone off and throws it at the reporter, but it doesn't hurt anyway because it's made of grey foam. The reporter broadcast the story that night. It was, everyone agreed, great radio. And although the reporter had to issue a full apology and retraction for the red/yellow card error, it burnished his reputation as the one to watch. The reporter was Alan Partridge. The manager, the name escapes me, but it must have been fairly local because I remember being pleased I'd driven there without stopping for a toilet break. I can't remember what he looked like either, or what colour his team played in. Just that he had a strong regional accent and used such a hilarious mix of tenses, he gets the ball and he's gone and kicked it, that he sounded like a malfunctioning robot at the end of a space fight movie. So what happened to me? How had I gone from the cosseted glamour of Our Price Radio to the snarling, balls-out toughness of sports reporting? Well, I'd always been a keen sports fan. It seemed to me that the world of sport, with its reliance on stats, facts, trivia and rules, provided modern man with certainty and structure. Just as a well-fitting jockstrap cups the cock and balls of a sportsman, so sport cradled me. You know where you are with sport. It's good. And it's also logical. Watch a play by Shakespeare or go to a modern art gallery and no one has the faintest idea what the hell is going on. Take Shakespeare. Not a play goes by without one character whispering something about another character that is clearly audible to that character. By virtue of the fact it has to be loud enough for the audience to hear it, it is inconceivable that it can't also be heard by the character in question. It's such an established technique in Shakespeare's canon, people just think no one will notice. Well, I've got news for you. This guy did. Sport, on the other hand, is straightforward. In badminton, if you win a rally, you get 1 point. In volleyball, if you win a rally, you get 1 point. In tennis, if you win a rally, you get 15 points for the first or second rallies you've won in that game, or 10 for the third, with an indeterminate amount assigned to the fourth rally, other than the knowledge that the game is won, providing one player is 2 10-point brackets or 15-point segments clear of his opponent. It's clear and simple. But that wasn't what catapulted me to local radio glory. No. What catapulted me to local radio glory was the fact that I'd been uninvited to a wedding at the 11th hour, reason not given, and had a day to kill. Happily, I received a call from a friend called Barry Heatherset, who moonlit as a radio reporter on Saxon Radio in Bury St. Edmunds. He'd heard I was free that day and asked me to fill in on his slot because he had to attend the funeral of one of his parents. I agreed, and he gave me a lift to the station, dressed in a smart suit but wearing a buttonhole flower, which I felt was in bad taste. I was introduced to the station controller, Peter Crowther, very much of the old school, biographical shorthand for alcoholic, and a man who could make or break careers like that. Eager to validate my sports credentials, I dug out a prize-winning thought piece, or essay, I'd written as a schoolboy. Labelled brilliant by one of the finest headmasters I've worked under, the piece took as its starting point the truism that there are lots of sports, each of them different from each other, before providing a pretty thorough breakdown of the main ones and peppering it with facts and figures. Faux leather-bound, I brought it with me. Crowther read the first page with bemused interest before, in a clear indication that he was still on the source, bursting out laughing. Very much of the old school. But it was a laugh that said, "Boy, this guy's good." I'd proved I knew the subject inside out. Within the hour, I was broadcasting to the whole of East Anglia, reading out sports reports direct from teletext. Heatherset, perhaps still crushed by the death of his mother or father, never returned to Saxon Radio, and they wouldn't have wanted him anyway. I ascended the career ladder like a shaven Jesus ascending to his rightful place in the kingdom of heaven. I was poached by Radio Broadland, Great Yarmouth, Harewood Radio, Peterborough, Radio Orwell, Ipswich, and eventually Radio Norwich. There, my brief extended beyond sports to a bi-monthly magazine show called Scout About, which I took over from amateur DJ and scout obsessive Peter Flint. "Fall in, troop! Fall in!" I'd shout into the microphone. And then, as the specially commissioned theme music ended with a romp-a-pom-pom, I'd say, "At ease!" And the show, a high-spirited hour aimed at Boy Scouts and to a smaller extent Girl Guides, would begin. It was great, great fun. But my sports reporting was obviously my top priority, and as such I became a valuable and well-known asset to Radio Norwich. The controller there, Bet Snook, was a chain-smoking woman who sounded like a chain-smoking man whose chain-smoking had called for an emergency laryngectomy. She gave me some solid gold advice.
"Dickie Davis, Barry Davis, Elton Welsby, Jimmy Hill, David Coleman, Tony Gubber, Ron Pickering, Ron Atkinson, Bob Greaves, Stuart Hall, Gerald Sinstat. What do they have in common?"
"They're all sports broadcasters," I said, "some more successful than others."
"But what's the difference between them?"
She sat back in her chair, smoking her cigarette, using her mouth. "Some are more successful than others," I repeated.
"No, more than that. Think about it. They're different types of sports broadcaster. Some are anchors, others commentators. Some are analysts, some are reporters."
I realised what she was getting at. "Alan," she seemed to be saying, "it's all very well being Norwich's Mr. Sport," which I was, "but you're spreading yourself too thin. Work out what it is in sport you want to be, and then be the best at it." So I did, and I was. I became the best sports interviewer come reporter slash anchor on British terrestrial television. In 1990, I was fortunate enough to see a steward badly hurt at an archery competition. In a funny kind of way, and at first it was very funny, this single mishap provided the springboard to a career at what was, in my view, the biggest publicly funded broadcasting corporation in the United Kingdom, the BBC. I'd been extremely reluctant to report on the contest, but had agreed to cover it live, as Taverham Archery Club was playing host to the British Archery Championships that year, and that was apparently a big deal for Norfolk. Whether you regard it as an ancient art form, a woodland hunting technique, or just a big version of darts, this is archery, I boomed. And we'll be following every twang, whoosh and cadoing of what is shaping up to be a classic British archery championships. It was sports broadcasting with real panache. That much should be obvious. But it was nothing out of the ordinary. That was until midway through the event, second favourite Chris Curtis accidentally discharged his bow, and it issued a rod of arrow into the arm of a female steward. And for the billionth time, I didn't accuse Curtis of being drunk, I merely speculated that he might be drunk. Suddenly, I was hurled into the middle of a breaking news story. This was live radio, and all ears were literally on me. The poor woman's wailing like a banshee over there, and as concerned officials gather round her to stem the flow of blood and presumably discuss what, if any, rule has been broken, I'll do my best to describe the scene. Basically, archers are standing round chatting. None of them has approached the stricken victim, but that's what archers do. If this was in the wild, the archers would stand there high-fiving each other while the carcass was retrieved by a young bushwhacker or a loyal gun dog. Not that she's dead. She's hit in her upper arm, which must come as some relief. If it had been her neck, it would have been curtains for both her and the rest of the afternoon's archery action. Coming to you live from Taverham. And while the lady steward squeals like an impaled but quiet pig, I can tell you she's gone into shock, and you can see that from here. The colour's drained from her, and she's all a quiver, and actually like a quiver, because she has an arrow in her. It's an unusual sight, certainly, a person lying there with a big rod coming out of them, like a human kebab, or if you prefer, some kind of lady lolly. And it's not an unattractive lady lolly, I must say, one that I'm sure every man here would dearly like to lick. But that's not in any way to trivialise what is clearly a distressing situation. St John's Ambulance are nearby, not doing anything, of course, but I'm not sure they're trained to administer medical care. They're to a real paramedic what the Salvation Army is to a Special Forces soldier. Still, they look smart enough. And the arrow's out. The arrow is out. It's been plucked from the woman like a pointy Excalibur. Well done, that man. Right, next to shoot is Mark Allen. When I played the tape back to Carol the next morning, she agreed, in an uncharacteristically effusive show of support, that it had been a powerful and moving broadcasting tour de force. And she wasn't the only one impressed. With my commentary played out on BBC News bulletins up and down the land, I was thrust into the national limelight. Suddenly, I was hot property. And so it was that 6 months later, I was included on a round-robin circular memo to BBC reporters, asking for applications to join the team of a new Radio 4 current affairs show. I was a wanted man.